is an extract from the Nature podcast. For the full show, head to nature.com/nature/podcast.
Dinosaurs became celebrities in the Victorian era, when loads of bones of these strange ancient reptiles were being found and studied. In 1888, Henry Seeley divided dinosaurs into two main groups, based, among other things, on the anatomy of their pelvises. There were the bird-hipped ornithischians on one side, things like Stegosaurus, Triceratops and Iguanodons, and the lizard-hipped saurischians on the other, including giants like Diplodocus and teeth-gnashers like T. rex. This basic division is described in children's books and museum displays across the world. Only now, almost 130 years later, is a new paper starting to shake things up. To find out more, Sharmini Bundell went to meet author Matthew Barron at the Natural History Museum in London, where he gave her a quick tour of one of their most popular galleries.
So we're in the dinosaur galleries, and above us are two wonderful skulls. This is actually really appropriate for what our researchers found, because these two skulls above us, one is Tyrannosaurus rex, the other is Triceratops horridus. One is a theropod, a big meat-eating dinosaur. One is an ornithischian, which is a group of herbivorous dinosaurs. So these dinosaurs were thought to be very distantly related, but our research suggests that in fact that these two dinosaurs are much more closely related to each other than either of them are to, say, Diplodocus.
Matthew Barron is, like many of the kids visiting the museum here today, really into dinosaurs. So he's very familiar with the standard picture of their relationships. But his new research is completely shaking up what's been a very long-standing and previously uncontroversial family tree. As any textbook will tell you, the dinosauria are traditionally divided into the herbivorous ornithischians on one side.
So above us is Chaoyangosaurus, which is a stegosaur. This is Triceratops. This is Iguanodon.
And on the other side, saurischians, including the large elephantine sauropods.
This very large femur is the thigh bone from a sauropod dinosaur, one of the long-necked tree browsers.
And the famously terrifying theropods.
So we're now coming up to the very large animatronic Tyrannosaurus rex. It's a particularly fearsome two-legged, bone-crunching theropod.
And while the visiting school kids here at the museum might be mostly interested in the giant animatronic T-Rex, if you look carefully, you can also find a display showing this basic dinosaur family tree. Carnivorous theropods and tree-browsing sauropods here, grouped under the name saurischians, and the herbivorous ornithischians over here. Away from the noise of the dinosaur gallery, I asked Matt how he ended up questioning this traditional division, especially since his PhD started out focusing only on ornithischians.
While I was looking at all of these early ornithischians, I kept being struck by how unusual some of the elements of their anatomy were. They have lots of features which, when you look at them objectively, are remarkably like theropod dinosaurs, the meat-eating dinosaurs. The only explanation that I'd been given was, oh, these are just coincidences. And that just didn't sit well with me.
Matthew and his colleagues decided to step back and analyse lots of different dinosaurs in lots of groups. Many such analyses have been done before, but this one was a bit more ambitious. Here's paleontologist Kevin Padian, who wasn't part of the study team.
There have been a lot of studies on the phylogenetic relationships, the family tree of the dinosaurs, but they've mostly focused on individual dinosaurian groups. But they haven't really examined the entire dinosaur tree in such depth. And so this analysis has the advantage of using a different and larger set of critters than most previous trees have used. They've analyzed the characters used by people before, and they're also adding their own characteristics. And this, they think, is getting themselves quite different configurations, radically different, in fact.
The tree that came out at the end of all of this was strikingly different to what we had been expecting.
Back to Matthew Barron.
Our hints at close relationships between ornithischians and theropods were proven by the data, but it was still quite striking to see. And actually, no matter what we told the computer program to search for, how to treat the characters, how to treat the species, it kept producing this shock result, which was ornithischians and theropods together.
Putting ornithischians and theropods together leaves the sauropods, like Diplodocus, alone on the other branch. Since the meat-eating theropods are no longer in a group with the sauropods, the name for that group, Saurischia, no longer exists in the new tree. And this rearrangement isn't just about changing some names and redrawing some trees. It could tell us more about what the common ancestor of all the dinosaurs looked like. And it may hint that the almost feather-like spines found on the backs of certain Ornithischians could be closely related to the spines that did eventually give rise to feathers in the theropods. That's if other paleontologists believe this complete shake-up. Kevin Padian again.
A lot of people are going to be very surprised by this result, and they're going to be shaken up by it. And I think this is wonderful for the field, because the importance of this paper is not whether it's right or wrong. It's how stimulating it's going to be for other dinosaur researchers to reanalyze what we've got, what we've been thinking, how we think we know what we know. People have to take their analysis seriously because they use the same methods as everybody else. You add a few different animals, you add a few different taxa, and your scheme changes utterly. What does that mean? Does it mean that we don't know anything? No, it just means that maybe we haven't been analyzing things as fully or comprehensively as we might. Or this new analysis could just be way off track. Time will tell.
And if time does prove that this 130-year-old idea has been wrong the whole time, will the Natural History Museum be updating the display in the dinosaur gallery?
Museums tend to be fairly conservative in their exhibits because they don't like to redo them any more than they have to. And so I expect that if this analysis stands the test of time, it may be modified a bit itself. It may shake up the existing structure. When the dust settles, then the museums and the children's books will decide what they want to present.
That was Kevin Padian of the University of California, Berkeley, who has written News and Views on the paper by Matthew Barron, who you also heard from and who is based at the University of Cambridge. Thanks to Sharmini Bundell and the Dinosaurs of the Natural History Museum, London, for that report. The paper and News and Views article can both be found at nature.com/nature.